Welcome to the annual budget hearings for the City and County of Denver's next fiscal year. This session of the annual budget hearings begins now.
All right, everyone, good afternoon. You are tuned into day three of our budget hearings. September 18th, we are about to hear from Human Rights and Community Partnerships. My name is Chris Hines. I serve on Denver City Council representing District 10. Councilmember Gonzalez, good to get us. You didn't hear this last time, but I'm going to say it again because this is a different briefing. A vice chair is like a vice president, is mostly figurative, but I want to thank the committee chair for giving me the opportunity to convene this budget hearing. As we've said with every budget hearing, if the executive branch of the administration is going to make every effort to answer all the questions here today, but we live in the real world, not Narnia, and so if your question isn't asked and answered today, please email it to Angela Casillas by... It is Narnia. Okay,
Narnia.
We live in the upside down. So if you have a question and you want to make sure that it's answered, email Angela Casillas by midnight tomorrow night, and you will get your response by Tuesday mid-morning. Great. Okay. So, Mayor, would you like to say anything?
Just thank you so much to Perla for her leadership. Delighted to hear about all the work that you're doing. Thanks for all of your incredible leadership, obviously, over the past year, stepping in on our newcomer supports. And I know that HRCP team has had a lot to manage in addition to that, but you all have done both admirably and in a real dedicated fashion, so we're grateful and glad to see you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and council members. I know we're on the home front. This is like the last meeting of the day, and next year I want to know how I have to pull the card to be the first one of the day. But I promise to keep you engaged, and thank you so much for allowing this time. Let me tell you about the Agency for Human Rights and Community Partnerships. We began in 1947 when the then mayor described the community as a family and that every resident should have a voice every day, not just on election day. HRCP was charged to study human relations in the city. And in that, we focused on disparities experienced by different ethnic groups. And we continue that today with our mission of proactively protecting human rights by building and strengthening community connections and relationships, and by building a vibrant and unified city with access for all through community engagement, partnership and collaboration, advocacy and policy. Some of the things that we have been focused on this year that we continue to do into 2025 are great government. You know, every department has a language access plan. And how do we communicate with our non-English speakers? Did you know that over 34% of Denver is a non-English speaker? And so that's why this is really important. We also have our disability rights, which is part of great government and making sure that everyone has access to all our buildings and all our facilities and everything that we engage in our community, and our deaf and hard of hearing. It's really amazing to me how much our deaf and hard of hearing are just a principal part of the city, whether you're at a conference by the mayor or you're seeing people in court. Being able to have access to those resources are very viable for our company or for our city to have equality for all. Safe Denver. As you know, there's a lot of barriers identified with our disability rights in our DOJ settlement, and we are working to be at 100% by March 8th when our settlement is over. We are working with the police network investigation community engagement. We work with Denver Police Department, Denver Sheriff's Department, and we go out to site visits and work with our RNOs on those sites that have had some kind of violence or crime that really needs support. We also train our cadets from Denver Police and Denver Sheriff's Department with our disability rights, our deaf and hard of hearing, and as you heard earlier, with our aging community. And we utilize our My City Academy for our immigrant and refugees to build trust with our law enforcement. Those are just a few of the safety things that we are taking forward to 2025. How do we engage in vibrant Denver? We're increasing our engagement with our 10 commissions that identify with some part of our community and that are 150 members strong. And we want to make sure that they're part of our community, that they're part of the process of engaging and answering questions about the work that we do in the city. And then, of course, our newcomers. We were part of the work authorization and asylum clinics implementation, and we continue to do that into 2025. But we're also helping with eviction prevention, and we're doing some financial coaching to help our newcomers be self-sufficient like we do with all of our residents. So what are we today, and what do we envision for HRCP? We want to support and empower a diverse community across all Denver neighborhoods while prioritizing historically marginalized areas. We want to bring our community leaders and government resources to converge and create strong partnerships and increase capacities throughout Denver. We want opportunities for innovation to take place and take root in local government and throughout the community to address local challenges. And finally, we want to utilize cross-agency approach and collaboration, recognizing that diverse perspectives, skills, and resources strengthen our foundation and lead to lasting solutions. At our core, we protect human rights, ensure that all people in Denver are afforded basic rights. We build community partnerships, we develop and maintain relationships like with nonprofit organizations, with city partners like Denver Public Library, Denver Parks and Rec, and Denver Human Services. We deliver support services. We work with internal and external stakeholders to identify and offer services that meet community needs with focus on vulnerable populations. My City Academy, financial coaching, sign language for our jail intake and court sessions, ADA access in our shelters, and eviction support. These are just a few of the things that our agency does. We advocate for change, knowing that in partnership with our 10 commissions, we advocate for the rights of all people, encourage participation in city government. We advocate for our BIPOC small businesses and nonprofit partners with technical assistance and support. And we engage residents. We empower and amplify community voices to provide positive activation through outreach and authentic engagement. We want to engage our RNOs, town halls, and community conversations even more in 2025. So how do our initiatives align with City Council's priorities and with our citywide goals from our mayor? Let me tell you. Through our priorities, number one is safety. We're leading the efforts with our language access plans, as I mentioned earlier. Communicating with our community of non-English speakers is important. And when we have a high percentage of 34%, it's important that we build that trust in our community and the language that is used. We partner and engage with Mayor's Safe City team, whether it is the Denver Department of Public Health and Environment, Office of Neighborhood Safety, Office of Children's Affairs, and more, we are all stakeholders in making sure that our city is safe. We partner with the mayor's office on community conversations, going out and listening to everyone to talk about what is needed in their specific neighborhood. And we're a lead partner on Policy and Investigation Network, the PNI board, supporting the six sites, supporting site group visits, and RNO collaboration and resourcing. And we now are starting to work in our trust patrol registrations for our community, making sure that our community registers to have a trust patrol in their location. And through that, we built this on My City Academy. In 2016, our foundation was to build relations and trust with our immigrant and refugee community and the police. And we're seeing such a positive impact on this work that it's nice to see us come full circle by adding the trust patrols. Initiative number two, how do we empower community? Through our Denver Connect, our mobile pop-up office resource van, Denver Connect, which launched in 2019, is a program collaboration with all city departments and community nonprofit partners. We're taking information to where people convene, especially our older adults. And what does that look like? Over 235 events in 2024, and over 25 organizations that we partner with. Taking information to where people convene is a way that they can access this information and share it with their neighbors and word of mouth. We partner with Colorado Attorney General's Office and Denver District Attorneys on stopping fraud and scams and abuse and neglect for our older adults. We educate and empower older adults and their caretakers with as much information about aging in place. We continue our digital training program, and so far we have graduated over 200 older adults with English and Spanish digital trainings in Montbello, GES, Westwood, and Park Hill, providing Chromebooks and hotspots. Our oldest participant was 81 years old. How do we impact immigrant and migrant policy briefings? We listen from the state, federal, and local policies and inform over 50 stakeholders every week, sharing critical information to prepare for migrant and immigrant impacts to our community, which includes Denver, El Paso, Fort Collins, Pueblo, and many more. And again, we support our tech commissions to engage in historically marginalized groups, provide feedback on relevant policies, and channel community input back to the government. When it comes to housing, although we don't have the budgets, we have great partnerships and our host and Denver Housing, Denver Human Services. Currently, Denver works with Dr. Cog, the Denver Regional Council of Governments, and the Area Agency on Aging on supporting our older adults with case management and low-income housing. We also have partners with Denver Housing Authority, Kavod, and Vina Partners to support in preventing additional risk of unhoused. We found that we were very successful in working with our nonprofit partners in case management out of shelter and into housing with nonprofit partners to continue supporting efforts on a grassroots level with mini grants. We currently support newcomers with our DITO partners on workforce and financial coaching to self-sufficiency. And HRCP is leading the eviction prevention program that is comprised of Denver Human Services, HOST, the Sheriff's Department, and City Council liaisons, and various others with a focus on working on prevention measures and education out to the community to mitigate these evictions. We partner with Climate Action Sustainability and Resiliency, CASR, to mitigate harm of environmental injustice in Denver and build up partnerships with other like-minded nonprofits like Groundworks, Energy Colorado, Mile High Youth Corps, and we see more collaborations in our future around aging. We also partner with CASR and on the Save Green, Be Green conference and grew 68% in participation from our faith and nonprofit organizations. How do we stack up with mental health and connections? We are a critical partner for the Forensic Elder at Risk 50-member task force, combating extremely tough challenges with cases that have been in the system for a long time or repeated coming back to, constantly calling 911. And we are there to be part of the solution of how we engage in this effort. We also are Denver Connect. We feel like our basic computer skills were able to promote self-sufficiency and combat isolation to further engage older adults with their family and friends, online telehealth, and ordering prescriptions. During COVID, we noticed that our older adults were the most impacted by the pandemic and the lack of being able to talk to people or have a human connection with people. So it was really tough on that demographic. And so being able to share with them how to use Zoom and how to talk with a group of people at once was really exciting for them. We partnered with Denver Parks and Rec with My Denver Prime, and that's something we go out to our communities and tell people that if you're 60 and older, you get free membership at the rec center. And we see a lot of higher membership in our aquatics and our silver sneakers, which was recognized a few years back as the best silver sneakers in the US. So we know that we're doing some right things with our older population. And our physical health and well-being is promoted by Denver Connect through education and awareness of the programs like financial empowerment through coaching with CV, Warren Village, and Denver Human Service to coordinate management and mental health providers for clients. Finally, we'd like to talk about our youth and families and how does HRCP work in this area? Well, we partner with the Office of Children's Affairs and the Mayor's Office on Youth Employment Initiative, creating 10 video series for Financial Life Skills Certificate. Of those, 615 completed the program, 67 requested those certificates to be mailed to them. This is something that we do with Florence Crittenton and various DPS hubs. We secured the Denver Empowerment Financial Literacy App for utilization with our youth. We partnered with youth violence programs and financial coaching with Homies Unidos in HYPE. And we provide Connecting Colorado, which is the state workforce portal, into our financial coaching efforts. We have partnership with businesses coaching with business financial coaching through NewsEd and Rocky Mountain Microfinance, giving over $260,000 in grant dollars and access to business banking and capital. And we've also used our $3 million in ARPA funds to do basic cash assistance, which has impacted 1,851 households. Our immigrant and refugee basic cash assistance program used this to address the second generation of how to have impact. So if a household is not focusing on some of the expenses that they currently have, they're able to, and not worrying about that, they're able to alleviate immediate needs and be more involved in school and not worry about working extra hours and having that time to spend with their community. And through our disabilities division, we've been able to support and train child welfare caseworkers on how to work with children and parents with disabilities. When we look at our multimodal transportation, which is number 8, we looked at partnering with Vision Zero. For the last few years, we have been on a task force in regards to how do we incorporate older adults and people with disabilities and making the crosswalks longer and making the font bigger on signs and really addressing that 1 mile from home to the bus stop. We utilized Dr. Cog Area and Agency to hop skip program to provide free rides for our older adults when they need access to the doctor or to the grocery store. And finally, how do we show up in the community without any initiative attached to it? We created Snow Angels a few years ago, and this has led to an amazing response. This past year, we went from 300 volunteers to nearly 500. More than 700 homes where older adults and people with disabilities live in Denver requested assistance with snow removal.
I want you to know I put all those things
I also, after this, did a whole batch of Mickey Mouse pancakes that turned out a little less well, but I did attempt them.
And finally, Denver Days. HRCP led the Denver Days efforts in partnership with Denver Fire Department and the Mayor's Office. This year, over 1,200 people were at the event, and we also gave away over 400 backpacks with school supplies. It was a huge success, and that whole entire week, we were able to partner with 50 community block parties during the week of Denver Days. So we're really excited about the work that we do in the community and how we're engaging and working with our goals. Now let me just share with you our structure. As you know, we have our aging and protection, our disability rights, financial empowerment, newcomer, immigrant, and refugees as of this last week, deaf and hard of hearing, and our community empowerment. We will take the first formal step toward establishing a community empowerment division to better engage the community in local government. One new position that will be added to Agency for Human Rights. This position will focus on researching, developing, and aligning community engagement strategies and resources across the city. We will work closely with Councilman Cashman and adding Councilwoman Gonzalez-Gutierrez and Councilman Watson to talk about the specific roles and responsibilities outlined for this position. And we hope to come back to you more in fourth quarter about what that looks like to start the new year. I know I talked about language access, and I just wanted to go into it just a little bit longer about how we struggled in 2022 and 2023 to get everyone on board with a language access plan. And we had to look at it with a different approach. So we took a step back and we integrated different conversations, not presentations, but conversations, and pulled together an integrated approach where we were open to feedback and listened to what every new executive director had to say about language access. We met with our IT partners and TS partners, and they created a new template that was more user-friendly. We met with agency heads and talked about why it was important to have a plan that spoke to people who didn't speak English. And we shared our best practices of STAR plans that came from Dottie and the Denver Airport. And our message was, let's get started. Let's not focus on perfection, but let's get started and start talking about how we would integrate language access into each department. And I can honestly say we have 6 departments that are STAR language access plans, and that our team took the complexity of this mandate and made the process easier and efficient. We are working hand in hand, and with each department, we are looking at more compliance as we get through the year. Newcomers and our work authorization in asylum clinics. First of all, thank you, City Council, for supporting all the work that we are doing around our newcomers. This is so important. I was in the thick of it with some of my colleagues, and I know how important it is to get people to work in self-sufficiency. We have processed almost 3,000 applications to date. We have another clinic on Monday. We've hosted 23 workshops with our partners of the Attorney's Office. We have engaged almost 4,500 newcomers, and our staff hours are about 850 with 1,028 volunteers. This is not something we do alone. This is something that we do with other departments, that we do with our community partners, that we do with our staff and our volunteers. We would not have seen this success without everyone involved. We currently have a backlog of 700 in the queue. We know this is an important part of integration into our community, and we look forward to continuing this work in 2025. This is a snapshot of evictions and prevention from HRCP and our Financial Empowerment Division. The mission of this critical work group led by Jay Solis from our Financial Empowerment and partners with HOST, City Attorney's Office, and Denver Sheriff's has been set to eradicate evictions through prevention mechanisms and process improvement, with a current focus and priority on our newcomer eviction support. We're collecting and analyzing data to understand the universe of the problem. We're making projections, we're understanding the gaps, and designing solutions based on data. The data shown here is our role within HRCP. We are establishing preventive strategies across the city and including our nonprofit partners to reduce the number of evictions. We're sharing resources available through TRUA and emergency rental assistance through the state. And we're visiting sites through the P&I process and working with apartment managers for those at risk. And currently we are at 102 evictions to date through end of August, and 41 of those are from newcomers. We will have an update for the end of September update with the 15 apartment complexes that we're working with, but we are on the ground. We are boots on the ground, working with managers, working with constituents to make sure that we don't grow this epidemic of evictions, and that we're really supporting people with all those needs. One of my favorite subjects, how are we handling our growing aging population? If you look at this chart, oh my God, slow down. You'll see that 65 and older will increase by 17,000 adults by next year. But by 2050, older adults will outnumber children 0 to 18 for the first time in U.S. history. And that is across the nation. And what are we doing to prepare for this growth? Well, since 2019, Denver Connect has supported 3,000 constituents each year and outreach to over 26,000 to support our older adults and their caretakers. In 2014, Denver became the first age-friendly designated city in Colorado. And in order to keep that designation, we're always evolving and increasing our work around our aging population. In 2018, we produced an Age Matters Needs Assessment report that identified many resources and services to support aging in place, but many were unaware of all of our resources. That's when we came up with Denver Connect. This has really opened up the communication channel, not only to our aging community, but to all the caretakers as well. To date, we have received funding that has supported our program to reach over 3,000 constituents a year and almost $1 million from Dr. Cog, Area Agency on Aging. The growth of this program from community collaboration and sharing resources when we connect with older adults and communities shows that we care and that we still value what our older adults bring to our community. In 2025, we will look forward to more intergenerational work, working with our youth and older adults, in programming that will benefit both. We've had inquiries from Austin, Texas on how we created our programming, and from AARP on how Denver Connect program is used as a model around the country, especially with our rural areas. As many of you know, I grew up with my grandparents, so this has a hot, this is a very warm to my heart place for older adults, and I'm so glad that you asked all the questions earlier in the Denver Human Services report out. Deaf and Hard of Hearing Services is our next slide, and I can share with you that over 59% we have seen over 59% growth in this area. Deaf and Hard of Hearing Services provides direct services of sign language and interpretation and real-time captioning via CART, which is the communication access and real-time translation, to all Denver government employees for their programs, services, and events. HRCP is the only agency that provides these direct services to Denver government. The demand for ASL services has increased tremendously over the last 2 years as more and more city agencies are using the accessibility statement, which promotes ADA access, welcomes deaf and hard of hearing people to city programs, services, and events. This statement, it is your right to access oral or written language assistance, sign language interpretation, real-time captioning, or disability-related accommodations. To request any of these services at no cost to you, please contact in 3 business days, and then we have a phone number. Our deaf and hard of hearing has experienced such an increase, and a lot of that comes from our Denver Police Department and our Denver Sheriff's Departments, because we're seeing more and more people come through the jail and court systems, and we do all the intake. We provide a sign language person at all of those services. And there's many times we get the question of what's the difference between disability rights and hard of hearing. Well, theirs is more physical and ours is monolithic. And so we are the 4th largest monolithic in the US by population, and so we will continue to do this work so that all people have access to our services.
Director, just a time check, we're almost halfway through and I think you have about 8 more slides, so if you could give us time for questions, that'd be lovely, thank you.
All right, addressing inequities, I think you know that we're all about equity, so HRCP approaches our work through a lens of equity and transparency. Through all our programming and efforts, we strive to ensure access for all, and we have a long history of being welcoming community and prioritizing our historically marginalized communities with support and empowerment across Denver neighborhoods. If you look at our budget, we have 8.6 is our general fund, and then we have 2 million from our energy efficiency, and we have grants through our immigration policy, we have a grant through Denver Connect, and we have 50,000 in ARPA. We're really good about pulling in money from other sources. We are very thoughtful about our positions and skills and intersectionality of our work, and we do a lot with very little. So I think that we are a team that really strives for collaboration with other departments, and this has helped us mitigate some of those decreases that we've had. As you know, we have 8.6, I'm just gonna skip through that real quick. And then what are the changes that we're gonna see? As I mentioned earlier, we are going to have a Division of Community Empowerment, which, thank you, Councilman Cashman, will be meeting with the council and others to provide what that looks like and what those positions and roles and responsibilities will take on. Strategies for mitigating impacts on our reductions. We're more cross-agency collaboration where intersectionality exists. We're engaging commissioners in HRCP initiatives and goals. And we're exploring more areas for partnerships around aging, low income, and fixed income populations. What does that look like for the TRUA budget amendment that we had earlier? The reductions across the agency to discretionary spending to minimize the impact on individual divisions. So we really spread it out very thinly amongst everyone, and we're all still doing the work that we do. These are just our agency ARPA updates. I'll let you all take a look at that. If you have any questions, please let me know so that we could get through this in a timely manner. I know you have questions.
Super, thank you. We do have people in the queue. Let's start with Council Torres, Councilmember Parity, you're on deck.
Thank you so much. And some of these I'm going to send to Angela because they might just be clarification of some of the slides. For the Office of Community Engagement that you're creating, is it going to merge the Office of Community Affairs and the Office of Neighborhood Engagement?
Yes, we will be working very closely with those offices to continue. This is, I think, our initial response was, let's hire the community empowerment person, and then how does everything come together to work on the recommendations that came out of City Council?
Is the goal to only have one, right? Or
to start with one?
No, but to have one office, because they all seem the same. Like if a resident's looking for something in the city, Office of Community Affairs, Office of Neighborhood Engagement, Office of Community Engagement, like.
We're still working the details on
that.
We don't have anything written down. We just had a meeting with Councilman Cashman yesterday. So I think that by October, we hope to have some kind of plan that will outline what this looks like starting January.
Okay, thank you.
And I can say aware of that too, because obviously we were working on this with Pearl, and she was kind and open to hosting. I think our vision is, as Councilman Cashman has laid out, is to start the first process by bringing in a person to lead this and having them survey all of the different parts of the city where these functions live right now, and where those functions work well where they are, where it would actually make sense to either bring those under one umbrella so there's one easy point of contact for all residents to get access to, then start to look at what are all the ways in which we engage community members either are working well or maybe need to be updated, like the R&O process or like the bid process or like the outreach process. So I think our first step is an inventory of all of the tools and services, a sense of what belongs under this umbrella, what needs to stay where it is, and then what capacity we need to make it effective where it is. I think that's step one for us.
Okay. So we're saying, as Dominic said earlier, we're putting a down payment to buy the house. We've got to look at everything to really put the plan together.
Okay, got it. Thank you. So we have a robust language access team and effort, in part because of the push of this council. 5 years ago, I started asking every department, how many non-English speakers do you serve? What's the budget that you put towards that? And nobody had answers to that, right? So that began the process of us actually building this up. And at the same time, DOJ had a settlement agreement with the police department because they were inappropriately using community to be translators. A part of the enforcement of language access is the enforcement of Title VI, Civil Rights Act, especially for federal dollars that we receive. And we've been doing that a lot for some of the things that we've been doing lately. And that was supposed to be in the anti-discrimination office. I don't know that it ever got implemented. Has that come up as a role that HRCP plays? Is that in the city attorney's office? What does that look like now?
That has not come up, but I will definitely look into that. We do have our anti-discrimination program works across the agency, and so I'm happy to look into that. But so you're saying that language access plan was supposed to go into anti-discrimination, or?
No, the LEP program was to work with city departments, right, for their language access plans. Title VI says that when every time we receive a federal grant, we're supposed to include a limited English proficiency plan in that. And it was never right. It was never done right in the past because we never had anyone who was point on that. And we can be sued for that if we violate it in some way. And so just wondering if that piece, the Title VI piece, ever got implemented.
I am not aware, so I'll have to get back to you.
Okay, no problem at all. I have some metric questions, and I'll just raise one. The slide on evictions and prevention,
yes.
Is HRCP processing evictions? Because that's what that slide looked like.
No, our financial empowerment is working on connecting with those individuals that are experiencing evictions, and sometimes they just call us directly, and we will work with them through our financial coaching and giving them the referrals to who they can contact to get the dollars to stay in place.
And do you track if their housing was saved?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
And We do all this through Salesforce with financial empowerment.
Okay. I think that outcome stuff is more important to me than the referral stuff. So, but I'll follow up with some specific questions.
And we're working on getting the outcomes and even more data. It's kind of hard to pull it through because we can't ask if you're from Venezuela, if you're from Mexico. And so we're really working with our financial coaches on those interactions and how we can pull those numbers to be correct.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Councilmember Parody, Councilmember Obidra is on deck.
Great. Thank you so much, and thank you so much, Perla. You guys do a lot of really important stuff in such a small agency. So I wanted to follow up a little bit about some of the restructuring as well. It's looking to me like what's happening with Datto, or what's happening, I guess I should say, if someone tries to file a charge under the anti-discrimination ordinance. Are we still processing those? Like, what's the update?
Can you repeat your question?
Yes, I'm so sorry. I'm losing my voice too. So I'm seeing the anti-discrimination office being zeroed out in 2025. Can you tell me more about
it's
that?
It's not zeroed out, it's a program. And what we're working with that program, we don't have enough staff to support some of the work that is being done with anti-discrimination. So we're collaborating with other departments like Excise and License, who actually has a hearings team and an investigation team, and we're collaborating with them on those efforts. And so we're using their team, and right now we're going through a Peak Academy to see how we can leverage and streamline some of the work that's being done that we don't have the capacity to do.
Right. So yeah, because you've been, your structure is being impacted also by the changes that you already spoke to Councilmember Torres about. So for purposes of the anti-discrimination ordinance, I just will be curious to hear what comes out of that, because I know we've had conversations about how people do need to be able to file charges under the city ordinance, or, you know, or it's a dead letter, but the burden of sort of processing those and getting people their determination letters, never mind investigating, has just been really difficult with the amount of staffing that you've had. So I'm interested to hear what comes of those conversations with Excise and License. And I guess I'm curious, what I'm seeing in the budget book, it looks like there won't be like a dedicated sort of DADO person necessarily, or you just don't know until
yeah,
after
there is there's a program manager, senior program manager for anti-discrimination. I think you've met her, Yvonne Yu. And she is currently working with Peak and with Excise and License to figure out what are those streamlines and where can we collaborate. And we have a second meeting on September 30th, so we'll have more of a summary for you in October of what that work looks like. Because what we've noticed is that some of the other departments needed someone like anti-discrimination, but then we need their hearings and their support with the investigations. And so teaming up together, we're able to do that work the best possible.
Okay, well, that's exciting. Okay, I think I have more questions about that, but not from a budgetary point of view. So, and then I think I heard you say something on this slide related to safety priorities about being involved in the Trust Patrol program. Can you say a little more about that as well?
Sure. So we are communicating, we put some flyers together, and we're communicating with nonprofit organizations in those PNI locations on how to get them registered so that they can receive a Trust Patrol. And we're working with our PNI, the entire board and team that worked on that.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank
you, Mr. Chair.
Great. Councilmember Abidras, Cashman on deck.
Thank you, Committee Chair, and thank you, Perla, for all of the information. It is really amazing what you do with such a small amount of money. I do see that there is a decrease of $113,000 in spending for the Office on Aging, and I'm very concerned about our growing senior population, especially those raising grandchildren amongst decreasing resources. I think this money is crucial, and so that is very concerning to me.
113, I don't think that's right.
What's happening is there was a limited position.
Yes.
That is expiring. So there's been a program coordinator position in a limited capacity for which December 31st, 2024 is the end. So I think that's what that decline is.
Well, and what I can share with you is that our aging and prevention that we've added, we've kind of reassigned some more people in aging because we know that that is growing. So our consumer financial protection people are also working in our aging division. And so that makes it five people that are in the department. We had a time-limited position, and I stole that position, and she's now my business operations administrator, but she serves as also the commission liaison, and she also works, still does a lot of work in aging. So she hasn't left, she's just not in that division, but she's still very passionate about it and still does a lot of work in that area.
That's good to hear, but I do think the office should be growing, not shrinking. I would say in my community, when the Office on Aging has been out there, it's been incredibly helpful because I have one of the largest populations of elders raising their grandchildren. And we have been trying to set up a meeting and get talk more about the resources for those elders and making sure that they have the resources that they need. And there hasn't been momentum there. And so I feel like if we only have a handful of people, that's just not enough. And I just want to say, like, first of all, I'm really grateful for the work that they're doing. And I just will say, like, I am concerned about that office shrinking.
So we have five people. We only had two at the beginning of the year. So we are actually adding to that division. So now it has five. And in addition to that, we will be having more conversations with Denver Human Services and the Department of Health and Environment, because we all agree that the three of us can be working together on this area if we do. So more to come on that. But we are definitely stacking up resources there, not taking them away.
Okay, that's good to hear. I think it doesn't look like that when I'm looking at the budget book, but we'll definitely follow up with that. And it looks like there's only a 5% increase to expenditures for Office on Immigrant and Refugee Affairs. Can we get a list? Well, one, can we get a list of those 14 apartment buildings that you mentioned where we are housing migrants?
Sure.
And then secondly, with the changes happening to the DASP and the transition of the newcomer program, I'm wondering what the role of this office will be in regards to the newcomers going forward.
We have lots of ideas, and we'll be meeting with PEAK on Monday. So our staff from Immigrant and Refugee Division and our newcomer people will converge and talk about like what everyone's role has been and what they've been doing, and kind of look at another meeting with how do we plan for a surge and how do we do this work together, knowing that every single undocumented and migrant person needs attention.
Okay, that's very helpful. And I think I would just also like to know, like, what's the coordination happening between the newcomer program and the refugee services and the community education in the context of racism and xenophobia?
So we'll be working with OSEI for sure, and Denver Human Services, and we're not there yet, but we're really looking at how do we take the staff that we have from newcomers and immigrant refugees and provide support for all of those demographics. So yeah, we will have a comprehensive plan that will address all of our undocumented and refugee and newcomer residents.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Thank you, Committee Chair.
Okay. Councilmember Cashman, Romero Campbell-Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Perla, for the presentation. Obviously, I'm once again very excited about the mayor's willingness to begin I think as you said in one of your slides, the incubation of an Office of Community Empowerment. I'm even more excited at what I've seen as willingness from the mayor's office in my discussions with you, willingness to collaborate with council on how this will come together and evolve. I do feel we're being a bit too skeletal. I don't think the one position is enough to begin that incubation. I've said from the beginning, I've envisioned a director and a couple of aides. They don't need to be new hires. They can be positions, as we've done with the Office of Neighborhood Safety, you know, shift existing positions. But I do believe the work involved is too much for one human being.
It will be a heavy lift, and I'm sure that we will collaborate with all of our partners where we see there is intersectionality and how do we, and there are other departments doing community work. How do we bring that all together? And I think that's going to be part of our discussions.
Yeah, I hear that. I do think we're being too skeletal. Full disclosure, I do plan on bringing a budget amendment forward for those two positions. Again, I have no dog in the fight as to whether they're new hires, which I think would be an awfully big lift in a budget this tight, but would hope we can get the new director more assistance. Besides that, happy man.
Just one, I totally appreciate that feedback. Just wanting to add to what Dr. Gaylor said. I think our assumption is sort of like when we built the Roads to Recovery effort. We started with one person in our office. Then we found there were people that were doing work deeply aligned to this work stream in DDPHE already, right? So Aaron, who you know, we brought over from DDPHE to the mayor's office to now lead on it. I think similarly, we think with a little bit of digging, we're going to find their existing FTE and existing rock stars in different parts of the city doing a part of this who should be moved over to Perla's team, report to this director, and be that deputy or that aide. And so and we may look for 3 months and say, actually, gosh, we've searched the whole city and there is no one doing this work and we have to create new roles with new people. I think our first presumption is that there are people leading the work in a disparate way that we could move and put under this person. And so we agree with you, there probably needs to be more staffing. I think our first hope is to look across our existing talent to see if it's there somewhere.
I haven't met you right that there are positions that can be shifted around.
Sorry.
You bet. Thank you.
I feel very confident about pulling this team together and the work that it can do, especially with the resources that we currently have in HRCP, with our nonprofit work and our community engagement and all of that, and bringing it together in one place. So I'm not worried about it. I think we're going to be able to do it and make you happy.
I like to be happy.
I like it.
You good, Councilmember?
I'm extremely happy.
Oh, wonderful. All right, Councilmember Romero Campbell, Gonzalez Gutierrez on deck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for this committee. It's a reflection when I was looking at the budget and also in the presentation. There is so much that HRCP does that is the how we want to do things within the city. We've had a lot of presentations of the what, you know, and it feels like we are so bare bones in this particular budget, and also a tremendous amount of lift. I was trying to think of analogies of what it would be like. This is the mortar. This is like the condiments on the hot dog. Like it's all of the things that we talk about as to who we are seems to be wrapped up in HRCP. And then I see the budget reductions that you have. And you know, I know that it was a position that was there and you're rearranging over here for our, you know, Office of Aging. And I think about all of the other data that we've talked about in our other conversations about the need to lean in and go further with older adults. So I'm trying to formulate my question around what does that mean for how we move forward with budget? I don't know if I've seen in another agency that's presented, I was looking, and if I see this right, Office of Storytelling that's no longer funded forward.
We have reimagined that into a marketing and communications team, which we really needed. With our 10 commissions and all of our different divisions, we really need to talk about the marketing, we need our marketing efforts and our communication efforts streamlined across the agency. While I agree that storytelling did great work and I know that they were beloved in the community and I agree with that, we really needed support services to help us with getting messaging out from newcomers to aging, and we didn't have that support. We were just, you know, kind of hiring out and getting information where we could, and we really needed a MarComs team, but we also needed more people in aging, and that's what we've done. We've realigned and we have 5 people in aging, which was very, very important to us. And we also have a person that leads our commissions. We needed some leadership with that and special projects. And so we're always getting all this, you know, oh, can we do this? Can we do this? And so we just needed that support.
So, and yeah, and it's no criticism that things are being rearranged. So should I be looking at this in a way of you're reimagining how the office is organized and where the assets are and how you're getting the work done? I still find it very difficult in, and I know that we are in budget constraints, that we have a department that is so core to how we say we do things, to be cut and reduced and reorganized and reimagined. Great, that's an opportunity, and it's still just a hard thing to, for me, wrap my arms around, like, what does this look like moving forward? And again, with the new Office of Empowerment opening up, like, how do we set that up for success? And so I appreciate that you're going to bring, you know, some budget pieces forward. It is no criticism to you and what you've done, because I think you've done a lot with very little. It's just something that I'm trying to reconcile in this budget, and would advocate that in that reimagining, we think of it as, this would be an area that I would say needs more.
Councilwoman, I just wanted to point out that in the general fund, it's actually growing by 6.7%, just to make sure that I don't want people to think that we actually went in and cut it. Actually, as a general fund agency, it actually has not been reduced. It's actually at 6.7%, just as a bottom line.
And I'm excited that the newcomers is coming over and bringing staff and with so much experience. And I think that while we continue, every department continues to look at what we're doing and how we're doing, we're evolving with, you know, what's happening in our city. And I feel very confident that we are doing a great job with what we have. And every department could use more people and more money. And I think we're doing a really good job with what we have.
I appreciate that. It's a very nice and gracious thing to say as well. But I, again, is the increase, and maybe I just am not reading this all correctly, does that all come from the work that's happening with the newcomers? Is that where we're seeing the budget?
No, that is not reflected in this budget yet.
Okay. So maybe I can just, I'll put my questions in just for further follow-up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr.
Chair. Councilmember Gonzalez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for saying that those are some of the same questions I had, but I do have other questions. So on slide 14, I think Councilwoman Flores had mentioned this, or was asking about the same slide, the prevention. So how are we identifying whether or not they are newcomers? How is that being identified?
Well, first they speak Spanish, and it's we're coming across apartment complexes that are multiple families, and so multiple Venezuelan families living together, so that's how we know. And also, when we're talking with them, they might provide, I'm from Venezuela, or I don't have a job, or I don't have a working permit, and so then we're pointing them in the right direction.
Okay, thank you for that. And then second question on the language access. Do we have any information about any progress that has been made with regard to, like, the agencies implementing their language access plans?
Yes, we are working very closely with each agency. Each agency has a liaison for language access as well. And so we're working with them on, one, here's the plan, here's the feedback, and then how are you implementing that? And I think as we go and as we start receiving more and more plans and reviewing, which we hope to have by the end of this year, I think you'll start to see more implementation in 2025.
Great. And does the City Council, like, is our central office, are we a part of that as well?
You know, I'm going to double check that. I think you are, but I don't.
I know that we
don't know for sure.
I have a plan, but I want to make sure, like, how we're incorporated that with HRCD.
Okay, I'm coming after you now. Language access. Yeah, I will double check.
Okay, thank you. And I mean, I really appreciate being able to hear this. And Councilwoman Torres had pointed out that I think prior to you coming to council, there had not really been budget briefings from HRCP. So I really appreciate you being here. And with the mayor's team for making sure that we get this. So thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to make a comment, and then Council Torres, you're back in the queue. In August of 2016, Auditor Tim O'Brien released an audit on Denver's approach to parking for people with disabilities. At the time, the Disability Parking Enforcement Program was under HRCP. In that audit, the auditor said there was no approach to parking for people with disabilities. I have had this conversation with Dottie, had this conversation with public safety. I just want to put it here on the record that we last year issued 400,000 parking tickets, 5,000 of which were parking for people with disabilities, accessible parking violations. That's 1.5% of the total parking violations. ADA requires 2% of space be designed, constructed, and maintained for people with disabilities. So if we're looking at parking spaces, we're issuing fewer citations than the parking space requirement, which, by the way, the auditor said we don't have those minimum standards in the city of Denver. And that's it's public record. It's on the auditor's website under August 2016. Did an update in October 2018 and said nothing's changed. I would also say that Colorado drivers, between 10 and 12% of Colorado drivers qualify with a valid placard or plate getting into accessible parking spaces. So if we have 10 to 12% of Colorado drivers trying to, and they're 1.5% of citations, I think we might be low. So I've worked with the last administration. I'm not working with the current administration. I want to make sure that we continue to protect the civil rights of people with disabilities and make sure that they have access to all the things they need to survive and thrive, including parking spaces. So that's no need for you to, if you want to comment, that's fine, but just putting it there.
Work with our Division of Disability Rights to see if we can somehow put a task force together and maybe address that since it's been going on for so long.
Thank you. Councilor Torres.
Thank you so much. Perla, just want to put in my thanks for the agency as well. I spent 18 years in HRCP before coming over to City Council, and it's where I learned so much about the city, but also about my own role in what the city does, and I think HRCP cultivates that in a really unique way. And so I thank you for taking on the task of leading that agency, and really do hope our effort to put HRCP into the charter and make it a permanent fixture of this city really goes a long way to demonstrating how much we value this agency and the commissions and the offices and all of the work that you do. So my thanks and Councilwoman Sawyer's thanks in her in absentia. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I feel privileged to work with HRCP. It's a passion of mine. I started out with the Office of Aging for 6 years, and then in the last year I've been here. And so it is truly an honor for me to work in this department and work with everyone in our community. But I am so grateful for you and your guidance for the last 18 years. I got to work with you for 6 of them. And appreciate that everyone in this room knows that the work that we do day in and day out is really to lift our community, and we will continue to do so. So thank you.
All right, there's no one else in the queue. If you have no other closing statements, we are adjourned.
Let you guys off.